by the U of I's Center for Advanced Study, co-sponsor of the Arnold O. Beckman Lectures in Science and Innovation presentation of Pluralism as a Foundation for U.S. Scientific Preeminence by Raymond L. Orbach, Director of the Office of Science in the U.S. Department of Energy, on Wednesday, May 5th at 3 p.m. in Room 141 Loomis Laboratory at 1110 West Green Street in Urbana on the U of I campus. For more information, go to www.cas.uiuc.edu.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. To talk with Susan, give us a telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. You'll find her on the web at www.eatinmove, that's EATNMOVE.com. She also has an office at Strawberry Fields in Urbana. Questions about diet, nutrition, and exercise, all are invited. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
We've already got a listener
waiting
to talk with us. So let's go and talk with a listener in Champaign. Line one. Hi.
Hello. I bought a cranberry juice drink, juice cocktail, and it has an ingredient in there. It's A-R-O-N-I-A-B-E-R-R-Y. I could not find it in my dictionary. Could you tell me what it is?
Boy, I wish I knew what it was. It's A-R-O-N-I-A-B-E-R-R-Y?
Yes.
A particular kind of berry, I guess, but I don't know specifically what that is.
I've never heard of it.
I'd have to do a search on that and see if I can find anything about it. I don't know if it would be, you know, many times those juice cocktails or the cocktail mix and things will have other types of juices added to them.
Could I read the whole ingredient list?
Sure.
It's high fructose corn syrup, apple juice concentrate, cranberry juice concentrate, aronia berry concentrate, natural flavors, fumaric acid, and citric acid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I bet there's a botanist out there who knows what that is. But
you know, if you hand me that piece of paper, Susan, I'll Google it.
Okay, great.
While we're talking,
do that quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes deciphering the labels, it can be tricky.
I would like to know, in your opinion, if this is worth drinking or if I should throw it out. Sounds to me like it's no better than Pepsi or Coke or something.
Well, you know, as a general rule, what you want to look for with the juices are those that are 100%, if they can be. Now, you look at cranberry juice, generally they have some type of other sweetener added to them because they're so, it would be so bitter that it's, you know, really wouldn't be possible probably to have that. But
it has apple juice in small print, and then it has cranberry juice in large print.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, the ingredients really were so small I couldn't read them. I read them when I got home, and I was ready to throw it out.
Well, here's what the original question was about. Aronia berry. It is a berry. It is a native plant, a Native American bush, and it fruits in September through November. It has glossy, pea-sized violet black berries harvested in late summer. They have a strong, stable, staining natural color. Their flavor is strong and sour due to a high flavonoid content and is naturally high in vital vitamins and minerals.
There we go.
Well, I thank you very much.
Well, there you're very welcome. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions are welcome. Hope we can do as well with the next caller. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free. 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat, our guest this afternoon. She's a registered dietitian. Well, let's talk about another product that maybe we should be concerned about, something entirely different. Yesterday, I picked up a magazine ostensibly about good nutrition, but I think it was really meant to market to sell supplements.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And on the back cover, there's an ad for a weight loss product,
mm-hmm.
and it shouts, "Ephedra free, ephedra free." Here's my question. Ephedra has now been banned, but what's on the market taking its place? Are these products safe?
Well, that's the big question right now. About a week and a half ago, the FDA came out and said that they're gathering evidence now on the safety of several of the alternatives to ephedra, because there have been some potential problems with some of these types of supplements, too. And actually, a couple months ago, I wrote a review all about ephedra-free supplements, and that was really geared more towards athletes, because this is something that's being marketed heavily for exercisers, athletes, or you're trying to burn fat, you're trying to get more energy in general. And so they're really out there marketing to collegiate athletes in particular, but also athletes of all, you know, all levels. And so what I found in looking at a lot of these supplements is that most of them, or many of them, have three components. One of them would be a caffeine-like component. And here's, you know, just an example of some of the things that we might find. I'll kind of go through those that would be caffeine-related. Things like green tea or black tea, which they will have an extract, which generally will have some caffeine in it. Guarana, which is a caffeine-like herb, or an herb that contains caffeine. Yerba mate, which you also might hear a mate drink, or yerba mate, which is a caffeine, has a lot of caffeine in that as well. Things like kola nut, those kinds of things are just caffeine added. So usually there's one part of it, maybe caffeine or several different components of caffeine. Then many of them also have a component that might be similar to ephedrine, and that could be something like synephrine, or what you might see on the label would be bitter orange. And it's not the exact same thing as ephedrine, but it's real similar to ephedrine. It's similar enough that the NCAA bans synephrine just like they ban ephedrine. And what's interesting in reviewing some of these supplements that I found, there was one in particular that was marketed very heavily to NCAA athletes. It was brought to me by an athletic trainer who works with these athletes. And it said it's not banned by the NCAA. That was on in all their marketing material. When I looked it up, it certainly it was banned by the NCAA. But it wasn't ephedrine, but again, it was a very kind of a cousin to ephedrine. Then the other thing that I found in a lot of these products is willow bark. And willow bark is put in there because willow bark has compounds, salicylates, that are similar to what you might find in aspirin. And so originally when these ephedrine-like or energy supplements were really popular, they kind of stacked them. You'd hear about the ECA stack, particularly a lot of bodybuilders were using ephedrine, caffeine, and aspirin. And supposedly the aspirin because it would, you know, dilate the blood vessels or make your blood a little bit, less sticky. Mm-hmm. Maybe perhaps you'd get the buzz in there a little bit more quickly or something. So many of the products I found kind of mimic that, which that's where we tend to see more problems, is if you have several components put together, whether they're herbal or whether they're supplement form, where you might have more of these problems. The other problem I found was that many of the products contained well over the 300 milligram of caffeine serving per product that's really recommended. And that would be 300 milligrams of caffeine is about the same as, you know, roughly 3 or 4 cups of coffee in one dose. And so some of them are recommending 2 or 3 doses. So you think about that, that's 12 cups of coffee at once, the shot of that much caffeine, which for many people that will increase heart rate. That could certainly cause some problems. So I think we're back to the same recommendations as we were for ephedrine when it was out. And that is, if you take it, don't take more than the label says. Make sure you know really how much that is. If you got any predisposition to any cardiac problems, don't take it. And the other thing is, we just don't know who are going to be some of these people who respond poorly to this type of supplement as well. And so, I think there's some real potential problems here because we're seeing particularly a lot of caffeine in a lot of these.
Okay. Well, let's come back to this topic in a minute. But we've got 3 listeners waiting to talk with us. So let's go and talk with some callers. Next, we're going to talk with a listener on a cell phone on line 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Nancy, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you. I'll try to make them brief. 20 years ago, when women took birth control pills, it was often recommended that folic acid supplements be taken as well because sometimes the pills interfered with the either the absorption or the metabolism of the folic acid. Is that true today with the newer types of meds out there?
Well, generally, it's not thought of as a big problem right now, partly because the amounts of the hormones that you take are so much lower than they were at that time. And the other thing with folic acid is it's now fortified, or so many foods are fortified with folic acid now to help prevent neural tube defects that folic acid generally isn't a problem. I mean, my recommendation still is for everybody, you know, particularly every female, to take a 100% multivitamin that has iron too and would have these B vitamins in it as well, just because it's a smart move to take that in a 100% amount. And that would, of course, take care of the issue in itself. But generally, folic acid is not going to be a problem for women if they're, you know, taking in a variety of foods anyway.
Okay. Second question. When you were speaking about ephedrine, you mentioned that you had written an article recently about that. Could you tell me in what publication that appeared and if it's still available?
Right. It's something that I could actually have a copy of it here if you wanted to send the self-addressed stamped envelope. But it also now was actually a publication I wrote for the Gatorade Health series. And so it's supposed to be online now up on their website as well. And that's just www.gssiweb.com. And that's called the Gatorade Sports Science Institute. And so I actually wrote the article for Gatorade to send out to all the coaches and health practitioners and athletic trainers and so on their listserv and everything. So that's and it's also supposed to be up on their website. Last time I checked, it wasn't there yet, but they also told me it would be there very shortly. So you might be able to find it right on that website as well.
Okay. And finally, would you be able to recommend any kind of magazine or journal or a periodical that you would say that contains a lot of good information regarding nutrition for the public? I know that many, Mayo Clinic has a newsletter, mm-hmm. Tufts has a newsletter, but of all of them, and I'm sure you've read many of them, could you recommend just one overall general one?
Well, that's tricky because they are a little, you know, they're all a little different. The ones you mentioned are certainly good ones. One that I particularly like a lot is called Environmental Nutrition. And it's they're all going to have maybe two or three topics they cover each month. And
yeah.
I like this one, too. It's written almost solely by dietitians, and it's very practical. And so that's a good one. Another good one is Nutrition Action Health Letter. I don't know if I imagine a lot of our listeners are familiar with that. That's put out by the Center for Science in the Public Interest.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, they're a little bit on the side of, you know, challenging the government and the recommendations
mm-hmm.
and things like that. But a lot of their articles are just really thorough, and they try to talk with the lead researchers in the area. And so that's really good, too. And really, as a general rule, prevention is pretty good now as well. I mean, I really encourage my clients to read prevention because they do give good synopsis of current research and recommendations on how to implement it. And I think it's quite credible now, too.
Now, if one wants to purchase just single copies of these, the first two, Environmental Nutrition, and the other one, Nutrition Action?
Right.
Are they readily available in the magazines or bookstores? I mean,
no, they'd actually be, your best bet's probably to check online or again, Google it or try to find it online. I don't know that either one of them do. They might do back issues, one issue, but generally it's just a yearly subscription rate, too.
Okay, and you can just Google that online.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your answering the question. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. I would imagine that There's got to be a library on campus that would also, you'd be able to sit down and look through these, because there are people here studying diet and nutrition.
They might want to check the ACEs, the newer ACEs library. That would be the place that I would look. And I don't know if they have these in particular, but that'd probably be the place to check. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Let's talk with another caller, a listener on line two in the Champaign area. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was calling because I have gastroparesis, and I was wondering if there are any websites or places to purchase products for thin liquid diets that you can recommend.
Boy, offhand, I don't know that I could recommend one in particular. What you might want to, check through to see if there are any links through the American Dietetic Association website, and there might be through there. And that website is www.eatrightaltogether.org. And I don't know through a national organization, there might also be some recommendations through there. I don't have any handy, but you might want to check through the ADA to begin with. Through the American Dietetic Association, they have an area on their website where they actually have research reviews or their current recommendations on different topics. And that might be a place to find it as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line three in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Yes, I recently started taking niacin to treat high cholesterol because I didn't really want to start the statin drugs. My doctor prescribed an extended-release niacin, and it's continuing to cause quite a bit of flushing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm familiar with a product called inositol hexanicotinate, and I wondered if there's any newer studies on that particular version of niacin that I could share with my doctor. Do you have any information on the effectiveness of it? And I guess that's my primary question.
I actually just came back. I came back from a conference about 3 weeks ago, and part of what was reviewed at that conference was cholesterol-lowering medications as well as foods for cholesterol-lowering and so on. And one thing I do remember from the speaker who talked about that is that their lipid clinic, this was actually, and this might be a good reference for you as well, this was actually a speaker from the lipid clinic at it's called the Iowa Heart Center. And you might want to check with that. The woman who's a dietitian who coordinates the Iowa Heart Center lipid clinic's name is Cindy Conroy, C-O-N-R-O-Y. And she was the speaker, and one thing I do recall is they coordinate, actually the dietitians coordinate all of their lipid changes in lipid medication under the doctor's supervision and supplementation and that kind of stuff. And she was saying with niacin, generally they don't recommend an extended release. I'm not sure why, but it could be partly because you might see more problems with flushing from an extended release version.
It also,
of it.
Potentially, from what I've read, has a greater incidence of liver damage.
So she would be a really good contact for that. I'm sure you could contact her and even tell her that I recommended that she do that. I haven't seen any recent studies looking at the differences in the types necessarily. I'm going to check one thing while we talk to just see if there's anything new. I brought a new reference that I have to see if there's anything in there in particular.
The Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine by Murray, which seems to be a very good resource, but some of the studies that he cites are fairly old.
Yeah.
It's really hard to keep up, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, the books are, the studies keep rolling on, and the books have to go to the publisher,
right.
And that's kind of that takes a little while. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Susan Kundrat is our guest this afternoon. She is the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She joins us to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise once a month on the first Monday of the month. And you can join us this afternoon with your questions. Give us a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. W-I-L-L. Find anything in your new
book?
Well,
a couple things that I found, and these may be things that you do know already, but It says taking the regular niacin with meals in divided doses or with aspirin may reduce the flushing. And I don't know if that's something that's been recommended to you, but that could be helpful too. And definitely, like you were saying, the sustained release, for some people it actually may help flushing, but for others it may not help flushing, and it may be more associated with that liver toxicity, as you mentioned. See if I can find anything else here about the particular type. And I really don't see anything else with the breakdown.
Okay.
Sorry that I don't have anything newer on that.
And again, the university you mentioned was the resource was?
Actually, the Iowa Heart Center.
Iowa Heart Center.
Yeah, they have a website, Iowa Heart Center. And maybe if you checked on the lipid clinic there, the coordinator of the lipid clinic is Cindy Conroy. And she is probably the most well-versed in this whole area because this is what she works within, you know, works in day in and day out. And I would imagine she could give you some recommendation, too.
Okay. Let's talk with another caller. We're going to go to the toll-free line, a listener in Effingham on line 4. Hi.
Hello. I've never heard of inflammation as a medical problem, and supposedly it can be controlled some by nutrition, and I've seen two articles recently. What is this?
Well, certainly diet and nutrition has been, this is an area, when you look at inflammation in general, of course, there's a lot of things that could be dealing with, whether that's inflammation in terms of, you know, we've seen a lot of nutrients help with arthritis, for instance, and the inflammation with arthritis, maybe fish oil, for instance, or glucosamine chondroitin, one of the supplements that's out there that may help with that. We're seeing a lot more, and this may be what you're talking about too, a lot more information on inflammation of the arteries, inflammation in terms of how it relates to cardiovascular disease. And how,
yes,
and that's more what you're thinking about?
Yes, it says besides arthritis, it's now related to mental health, heart disease, Alzheimer's, cancer, diabetes, and Parkinson's.
Right. Well, I think it's being researched quite heavily because we do know that either when the arteries, when the blood vessels become inflamed, when other tissues in the body become inflamed, perhaps they're not able to get nutrients as readily as they need to, and certainly that can affect other problems. We know that if an artery is more inflamed, that might be a higher risk of having a coronary event. And so some of these nutrients that have been looked at pretty closely and are being researched now are even things like some of the polyphenols or some of the antioxidants that you might find in berries are being looked at. You know, berries have been researched quite a bit at Tufts and some other places for their potential benefit with decreasing the risk of Alzheimer's. And some of the nutrients in berries, if you consistently get them in the diet, can that help in terms of brain function? And that some of that has to do with inflammation. And certainly with cardiac disease, I think we've talked before here, things like even 100% Concord grape juice have a lot of these antioxidants in this 100% grape juice that certainly doesn't lower cholesterol levels, but might help keep the arteries more pliable and have decreased inflammation. So
this isn't just the latest fad, I guess, then?
Well, I don't think so because, in fact, you know, there are some researchers who work in this area of foods and cholesterol reduction and feel that really the shift is going less towards cholesterol reduction and more towards how do these foods help in other ways. And one of those is definitely inflammation. Because, again, if there is inflammation, we find that there might be more of a chance for a blood clot to form. And, you know, on top of that, maybe we have more trouble with blockages of the arteries and so on. And so definitely keeping the arteries healthy is one thing that research is really pointing towards. We can do a lot more of those studies than we could even 10 years ago, so it's definitely out there more.
Is inflammation an age-related thing or just a random striking like a lot of other diseases or maybe in families?
Well, I think it varies. You know, when you look at something like, like arthritis, for example, many people it's progressive, and so we see more problems as we get older. The body can't repair itself as well. And so that's where these ideas of what can we eat that might help our body naturally repair itself better is becoming a real area of interest in nutrition. And the first thing we do look at is these different antioxidants, which foods are higher in antioxidants, particularly fruits and vegetables and some of these good fats in the system, things like that, why it's important to try to feed your body foods that might help with repair and inflammation too.
Now this mentions wild salmon, sardines, herring, and walnuts.
Sure, yeah, and all those would be good sources of good fatty acids, omega-3 fatty acids, and other fatty acids that may help with inflammation. I mean, generally, generally it'll be recommended if somebody has extreme arthritis or some other inflammatory problems, that many physicians will recommend higher doses of, whether it's vitamin E or fish oils or things too, because that's been pretty well researched that may, you know, help decrease inflammation.
Well, you've helped me quite a bit. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. And, you know, I'm reminded of your business, Nutrition on the Move. It seems to me that I know that you specialize, really, you work with a lot of high school and college age athletes, but it seems to me that we're learning more and more about how nutrition and movement, exercise is important throughout life. And I think that they're doing a lot more now in terms of studying how in our older years, how important exercise is to our brain functioning and our well-being, our you know, how well we feel, and even in a reduction of pain with such things as arthritis and
exactly. Whatnot. And I think that's a good point. I mean, here at the University of Illinois, a lot of that research is being done right here, looking at older population and the benefits of activity and exercise. And you know, I have a family member with Parkinson's, and it's becoming more and more evident. We know that in diseases like that, staying active and keeping moving as well as eating well is going to be so important. And I think, you know, that's definitely been evident with kind of the progression that I've seen, that continuing to move, however you can do that, is so important in keeping your body's function as well.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling with more information for the caller who wanted to know about journals. And I'd like to recommend the Vegetarian Journal by the Vegetarian Resource Group. It's produced by people with PhDs and registered dietitians, as they have both degrees. And they also have a website, www.vrg.org. And they have scientific updates and notes from, you know, their scientific department, as well as recipes. And it's a very good production, and it doesn't have any advertising. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for the recommendation.
Thank you. That's a great recommendation, too. And as the caller mentioned, I think one of the great things about the Vegetarian Journal, too, is they have a lot of good recipes. I think sometimes people think if they're not vegetarian, they're not going to find what they want in there. But really, this organization and the resource as well are really excellent as far as anybody who's not vegetarian, too, because they do have a lot of research updates. So that's a great addition.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a couple questions. One is that I have acid reflux, and I'm trying to find foods that are going to make me more comfortable. And it's plus the fact that if I eat too much food at once, that's a problem, too. I'm wondering, are there any foods that are good for acid reflux? And my other question is, I was taking Natural Whey B Complex for mood elevation, and it seems like my esophagus is having trouble with that, acid reflux.
Right. You know, when you look at acid reflux, a lot of that, I mean, there are some key things that we look at. One of them, like you mentioned, is not eating too much at one time, because that tends to be a real problem with people. Sometimes making sure that you have some fluids with your meals, but not too much, can be helpful as well.
How do you gauge that?
Well, I think a lot of it's trial and error. I mean, the clients that I've had, really different foods seem to work for different clients. So it can be really variable as far as what, you know, we have certain things we know many people have problems with caffeine, or with foods that are more acidic sometimes will be problematic. You know, or alcohol can be problematic for a lot of people.
And then you try to eat stuff that's healthy for you. And a lot of those things have acid, like orange juice.
Does
orange juice have more acid than oranges?
I think it's got a little bit more because it's concentrated, more concentrated than juice. So oranges themselves might be better for you, too. And in terms of vegetables, many people can handle vegetables if they're blanched or if they're steamed or if they're cooked a little bit, so that they're a little bit easier to digest. And so I can still get those in, but...
Do you lose a lot of vitamins when you...
No, it really varies. I mean, you, as a general rule, we know that if a fruit or vegetable is fresh, it's mm-hmm. usually a little more nutritious, but not always. And so uh-huh. you'll still get a lot of nutrients out of a steamed vegetable. The big thing is to just not have it sitting in the water. I mean, that's where you lose a lot of the nutrients.
I see.
So
steam.
Put it mm-hmm. in a steamer, put it
what
in.
What about, I know that kale, isn't that supposed to be good for acid reflux?
Kale I've never seen a study just on kale for acid reflux, but it generally is not in the category of foods that are more problematic, so mm-hmm. that might be calming.
It's very hard
well.
To chew, mm-hmm. and that's my yeah. big problem.
Right. With yeah. kale, the difficult thing is to cook it enough so that it's easier to digest. It usually takes a long time to do that.
If you steam it, do you have any idea how long it takes?
Well, I know I've steamed it before for 20 or 30 minutes, and it still can seem kind of rough. But,
yeah,
so,
like an hour or two.
Right. So for a while, maybe mm-hmm. even longer than that.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing I would keep in mind, and maybe you're already doing this, but making sure that you stay upright as much as you can after you eat. And for uh-huh. some people, we usually say for an hour after you eat, but I've had a lot of clients mm-hmm. who really need to stay upright longer than that after mm-hmm. they eat so that they don't have as much of a
yeah.
problem with acid reflux.
And also, I know somebody who is dealing with this, and they will have a little container of Cheerios at their desk, or one of the oatmeal bars, or mm-hmm. you know, one of those snack bars, just so that there's something in their tummy without
yeah,
being too
when
much.
Yeah, because when I don't eat enough,
yeah. mm-hmm.
I also it makes my mood go down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of trouble with that.
Right. And I would look as far as the B-complex question, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some supplements out that are more liquid form now. And for a lot of people, that works
okay.
easier than having a solid mm-hmm. form.
Yeah, I seem to have trouble swallowing big pills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you might want to check that
yeah.
out, too.
Why do they have to make them so big?
I don't know.
sometimes dividing the dose,
yeah,
too, in two.
Cutting them in half.
How do you find out, with some of these things that are really in the market now, you know, like the B-complex for stress, you say there might be a liquid for that, acid, but you just don't know what some of these things do, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then there's tension tamer tea, and I don't know if there's a lot of acid in that.
I would doubt there would be a lot of acid in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a thing to keep in mind with some of the teas, they... The amount of B vitamins, which is probably the main thing that's in some of those tension-type teas, is extra
mm-hmm.
B vitamins. The amount that you're going to find in there is really pretty minimal compared to what
uh-huh.
you're going to get in a supplemental form. And so if you're really looking for additional
mm-hmm.
Bs for the benefit,
mm-hmm.
your place to get it probably is in a supplement instead of a tea.
I see. Mm-hmm.
For the
okay.
amount.
Are there any cookbooks out for acid reflux people?
There's actually a really good book out that you may want to look at.
Okay.
It's through the American Dietetic Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's called The Guide to Digestive Health.
Okay.
You can get that on the ADA website. I know. And again, that's www.eatrightaltogether.org. And the author of that is, her last name is Bonci, Bonci. It's Leslie Bonci. She has
okay.
different, there are chapters on different digestive concerns, and there's a chapter on acid reflux. I don't have the book with
okay.
me here today, but it's really good, practical recommendations,
okay.
and it's a small paperback. So that would definitely be worth your while, checking
okay.
that in the library or getting that book.
Okay, great. It's a very difficult problem, and there's a lot of people out there with it. And
right.
we need support groups, too. So far, I haven't found one yet.
Yeah, that's a good idea, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I tuned in late, so you may have already spoken about this, but could you tell me a bit about side effects that would be associated with taking Lipitor?
Well, what we see with Lipitor in terms of side effects, you know, one of the main things that's monitored is liver function tests. Because most of these medications that are statin medications can cause liver damage, which is one of the main concerns.
I knew about that. I've also heard about, muscle damage.
Well, there may be problems with muscle damage, too. I don't know specifically as much about that, but the main thing I know we generally monitor is looking at liver function, liver test.
Uh-huh.
But I think on any medication, some of that is related to the dosage and some of that is related to how long you're on it, of course, which is why a lot of clients, when they come to me, they're trying to do it with diet if they don't have to go on the medication. I think what we're finding with drugs like Lipitor, though, are there appears to be a lot of good things that can come out of taking that, which is why I think they're really used a lot more than they used to be as well in terms of cardiovascular risk reduction. I think the big thing you want to keep in mind, which I think is one of the keys, is that if you're on Lipitor, do what you can to try to stay on the lower dosage so that if there are things you can do with diet in addition to them, that decreases your risk of having some of these side effects. And this conference I mentioned a while back that was just on cardiovascular disease in general, that was really the big message, was that more and more people are going to be going on these medications because there's definite benefit for most people if they've got high lipids. But the risk really is extrapolated when you increase your dosage. And so, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of people increase dosage by quite a bit. And so if there are ways to avoid that with diet, whether it's adding phytosterols or adding something like Benecol or Take Control, or making sure if you're having oatmeal, you're having enough, that maybe you've got enough soluble fiber that helps bring that down and things. I think that's where it's a real key so we can decrease some of these side effects.
In the literature that comes like with the medication mm-hmm. that the pharmacist gives you, it mentions that daily use of alcohol can increase the chance for serious side effects.
Mm-hmm.
Does that refer to a glass of wine?
Well, when you look at alcohol, I think the main reason there is that alcohol has to be metabolized through the liver. And so it makes your liver work harder when mm-hmm. you've got more alcohol in the system. This dietitian I mentioned before at the lipid clinic in Iowa, you know, they really recommend that if possible, don't drink, because there is some interaction with the medications. And if you do drink, be really reasonable about what it is. Like she recommended that, you know, we really stick with what's a reasonable amount of alcohol, which is generally one drink a day. And one drink a day would be a 12-ounce beer or one shot of liquor or a 4-ounce wine.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, the risk is higher if you drink more than that. And so
if somebody was, like, really, devoted to a lifestyle that included, you know, a couple of glasses of wine a day and this kind of thing and a whiskey before going to bed, they were recommended to go on Lipitor. If they didn't want to give up that lifestyle, would it be better not to take the drug?
Boy, I think that'd be an individual question for them to decide with their physician. Because whenever you're looking at that, you want to look at all your risk factors. And so if the risk is higher not going on it and still mm-hmm. drinking, maybe that's what you would do. If it's the opposite way around, then you'd have to take a close look at that. It's difficult to say mm-hmm. in general, but I think it'd be something, and this brings up a good point. That's why it's so important when you're working with your physician to make sure that they really know what your lifestyle is
mm-hmm.
and know, because they may not ask how much you drink, but it's something that is going to affect it that you want to be able to tell them.
And what about smoking in the same vein?
Well, generally, if somebody's at risk enough that they're going to be on a cholesterol-lowering medication, that would be obviously a priority, is to try to stop smoking, because that's, of course, one of the highest risk factors
mm-hmm.
in addition with that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Next, we talk with a listener on line 3 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. This is certainly a worthwhile program for me to listen to. I wanted to call and invite your listeners to eat kale. A week ago, I was in Jerry's IGA, and a young woman was buying it, and I just went up to her and I said, "What do you do with that?" Because that's one of the few vegetables that I have never, never prepared and never, never eaten. And so she told me that she sautés onion and garlic in olive oil, and then puts the kale in, and when it's wilted, then maybe 5, 7, 8 minutes, then she takes it out. And my husband tried this, and it was wonderful. So I wouldn't try to steam it, and I wouldn't try to boil it or whatever else one does with it, but it was just delightful. And so I'm just calling to urge people to give it another try if you have tried it. Have you tried that?
I've actually sautéed it before
uh-huh.
with some other things in there,
uh-huh.
but not frequently enough.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, this was awfully good. Of course, we like onion and garlic.
Mm-hmm.
We very much like that. And I know kale is such a good vegetable for us.
Right.
And I just always overlooked that when I was reading, you know, the vegetables that we should include in our diet.
Right.
But this was excellent. And I don't know if there's good kale and bad kale. or if we just happened to do it, or my husband just happened to do it right, but it was delicious. And so we will include that in our diet from now on. So I just wanted to give kale a hand on the back.
Well, that's great, because when you do look at kale and some of the other greens, the amount of benefit, the nutrients in something like kale, like you're saying, is so great.
That's right.
And so, and not just, we often think, because it's a green vegetable, it's good for us, but it's really extremely high in some of these antioxidants that help with eye health, too. So it's always on the list of some of the top foods for helping to potentially prevent age-related macular degeneration.
I didn't realize that.
And so there are certainly a lot of benefits to it. So thank you. I think... I'm going to try to cook it more, too.
Yeah, well, I think you can decide how long it should be in there, but it just sort of shrivels, and maybe you decide, well, let's put a little bit more in, depending on how many people are going to be eating it. But it was really a success at our house.
Great.
Sure, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Also, a suggestion from our technical director, Henry Frain. He mentioned the Irish dish Colcannon, which is mashed potatoes. And my understanding of Colcannon is that it's mashed potatoes with any kind of other vegetable folded in. But this particular dish is made with kale, and you finely chop the kale and cook it, Henry? Cook it, yep, and then maybe process it. And then you fold it into your mashed potatoes.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful.
And that would be, I'm sure, that would be a kid pleaser, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Because mashed potatoes, you can't go wrong.
Right, and that takes care of the chewiness that sometimes people don't like, or the stiffness of it, too, that if you processed it, that'd be great.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. We have just a couple minutes left in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. If you'd like to talk with Susan about diet and nutrition, exercise, give us a call, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Back before we run out of time, and as long as we've taken care of all our listeners up to the moment, I want to go back to ephedra, and I want to go back to the issue of the stimulants that come in so many supplements. I'm pretty sure that these products have to be pretty attractive to kids.
Right.
Kids who are either trying to up their performance, their endurance, or lose weight. Should parents and or coaches talk with kids about the potential harm of these products? That's the one question, and I'm sure the answer has got to be yes. My other question is there any benefit to these products? You know, is there a social... Is there some social redeeming grace here?
Well, when you look at the research for ephedra, and there was actually a lot of research on ephedrin itself. You know, you think of it as ephedra for supplements or ephedrin or pseudoephedrin. I mean, it's been used for a long time, and it had been researched quite well for, does it help with weight loss? Does it help with fat burning? And in some populations, particularly in people who were obese, there was an increase in metabolism, a small amount, that over time that can affect weight loss. And so it's not that with ephedrin that a lot of these things really weren't true. For many people, they really felt like this made a difference, and some of the studies back that up in terms of fat loss, because perhaps the increase in energy, and you feel like you have more energy, so you're doing more exercise-wise, and I think there was really a ripple effect for some people. The problem with it is that, you know, we found certain people really reacted poorly to it. A lot of people died that were related to it. And so from a safety standpoint, it just wasn't worth it. And I think that's the same thing with a lot of these products. Many people, if they feel, you know, I might drink a cup of coffee, regular coffee a day, some days I don't. And I know that if I took a supplement that was equivalent to 4 cups of coffee, I probably would feel really funny, because I would never be used to that much caffeine in the system. And then when you look, what we do know about kids and supplement use is generally high schoolers, middle schoolers, if they're going to take something, they usually take more than what it says, because it seems like, hey, I want a little bit more energy than that. So you might be dealing with a kid who doesn't drink much. Maybe they don't drink much caffeine, or just 1 or 2 cans of pop a day or something. They go to 12, same as 12 cans of pop a day. They could end up in the emergency room. So I think with parents and kids, or looking at coaches and parents, you really should try to have an open, what I try to do is have an open you know, communication. Please tell me everything you're taking. I'm not going to necessarily just say no to something. I want to know so if we do take it, you know how to take it responsibly, how to decrease your risk of any kinds of problems. And so I think the thing with researching this article, the biggest surprise to me was just how much caffeine is in so many of these things. And then other supplements, you can't really tell how much because it's all different herbal forms.
Yeah. And then if you're stacking that with, if you're taking a, like, let's say you got a headache and you take a headache medication that's got caffeine,
right,
and then you have a couple of Cokes during mm-hmm. the day, and it just,
right,
pretty soon you could have a racing heart.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Well, we've used up the time. I want to thank you very much for coming in and giving so generously.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Susan Kundrat. Next month, Susan will not be with us. She'll return in July, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Next month, however, we will have a show that I think you should enjoy, listeners. We're going to talk about bone health. We're going to talk about a natural diet and exercise program to reduce the risk of osteoporosis in women and men. Our guest will be Dr. Leon Root. He's a medical doctor and the author of Beautiful Bones Without Hormones. We'll talk with him on the first Monday of June in this time period here on the Afternoon Magazine. And then we'll welcome Susan back to the program on the first Monday in July, provided that's not Independence Day,
right,
or something. Very good. Okay, again, thanks to Susan. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices should be in now from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. On the Chicago Board of Trade, an up day across the floor, including the grains and the oil seeds. Let's begin with the grains. The May futures in the wheat pit at 388.5 high today. Low at 383. Their settlement price at 387.25, up 5.75. July futures, 398. The high, the low at 391. Settlement at 397.25, up 7.25. September futures for the wheat, 403.5. The high, the low at 396. Settlement price at 402.5, up 6.75. In December futures, 412.5 the high, the low at 406.5, a settlement price at 411.25, up 6.25. March futures in the wheat pit, 417 the high, the low at 414.5, settled 416.75. They were up 5.75 on the day. From the corn pit, the nearby May contract, your lead option, 319 the high, the low at 315.25, settlement at 318. They were 1.5 higher. By the way, those are in notice day now, so deliveries are being made against the May contracts across the Chicago Board of Trade. July futures, 325.5 the high, the low at 321.5, settlement price at 324, up 3.75. And the September, 322.5 high, low at 318.25, settled 321. They were up 2.25 for the day. December futures now, 321.75 the high, the low at 316.5, settled 319.75, up 2.5. In the March, 324.25 the high, the low at 320, settled 322.75, up 3. May corn for 05, 324.5 the high, the low at 321. Next year's May contract, 323.75, settlement price up 2.75. In July of next year, 324.5 the high, the low at 320, settled 322.75, up 3.25. December futures, 280 the high, the low at 278, and December 2005 corn settled at 279 today. They were 1.75 higher today. May oats, they were a loser today, down 2 cents, 174.5 the high, the low at 170, settled 171. Down 2, July futures in the oat pit, down 3.5 cents, 181 the high, the low at 176. And settlement price at 176.5, they were down 3.5. I didn't catch those lower markets when I was scanning things very quickly, so there were a couple of losers on the day. But the oil seeds all up in the soybeans and the bean meal, and one contract in the oil was down. May bean oil, or rather May soybeans for the day, 10.48.5 the high, the low at 10.30, settled 10.41.5, up 7.5 cents. July beans, 10.31.5 the high, the low at 10.11, settled 10.21. They were up 8 for the day. August soybeans, 9.59 the high, the low at 9.42, settled 9.52.5, up 13. September futures, 8.36 the high, the low at 8.19, settled 8.31.25, up 14.75. And November's, 7.65.5 the high, the low at 7.46.5, settled 7.62.5, up 17.75. January soybeans, 7.65.5 high, low at 7.54, finished 16 higher at 7.61. And the March futures, 7.55 the high, low at 7.46, settled 7.53. They were up 17 for the day. Now the bean meal, 3.26.70 the high, the low at 3.18.50, settled 3.22.20, up 4.10. And July meal, 325.70. The high, the low at 317.50. Settled 321.20. They were up 5.20. Maybean oil for the day, 34.20. The high, the low at 33.50. Settled 33.92. Down 11. And July bean oil, 33.80. The high, the low at 33.08. Settled 33.32. And they finished 4 higher for the day. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, let's take a look here at what happened today on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. May feeder cattle, 99.80 the high, 98.45 the low, 99.80 the settlement, that up 150. August, 99.50 the high, 97.90 the low, 99.25 the settlement, that up 82.5. September feeder cattle, 98.30 the high, 96.90 the low, 98.30 the settlement, that up 120. May live cattle, 85.30 the high, 84.25 the low, 85.10 the settlement, that up 150. June, 82.50 the high, 80.95 the low, 82.27.5 the settlement, that up 187.5. August live cattle, 84.52.5 the high, 82.70 the low, 84.30 the settlement, that up 145. May lean hog, 75.50 the high, 74.60 the low, 75.20 the settlement, that up 80. June, 75.47.5 the high, 74.40 the low, 74.90 the settlement, that up 82.5. July, 75.77.5 the high, 74.80 the low, 75.50 the settlement, that up 65. August lean hog, 73.17.5 the high, 72.40 the low, 73.10 the settlement, that up 67.5. May pork bellies, today's high 117, the low 114.16. Excuse me, the low today for May bellies 114.60. 114.60, and the settlement for May bellies 117, that up the limit up 300. The Dow up 39 points at 10,269. The NASDAQ is up 8 at 1928. And the S&P 500 is up 5 at 1113.
This is Les Schulte, WILL's Director of Corporate Support. If you own or manage an agribusiness, you can help in supporting this valuable service on AM 580. To find out more information, give us a call at 217-333-0850.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and coffee bar.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Dear Dr. Science, writes Mark Whitehead from South Portland, Maine, if a man is a liar and says, I am a liar, is he?
That depends on whether he's telling the truth or not. If he's lying when he says he's a liar, that makes him a truthful man. If he's telling the truth when he says he's a liar, then of course he is a liar. This question is an example of what science calls paradox, which is Greek for have your cake and eat it too. The improper use of paradox is what caused the death of Socrates, who was forced to eat hemlock by his annoyed